this month on the Speakeasy, since everybody is fleeing from coronavirus, we are going to once again do another... this is a topic we thought would be fun. Unfortunately, we cannot be in the same location to record this one, but I feel like so many podcasts nowadays are two or more people talking, you know, remotely. So I feel like, you know, we're in good company.
Actually, yeah, I was going to say that I'm not sure everybody who listens to the podcast even realizes that we always record it in the same room. You know, we meet up and we make sure to record together. So this is a little bit of a departure for us. And honestly, I don't know if the next episode is going to be in the same room or not. You know, it's a very weird time for everybody. And I like debated whether or not I wanted to really like talk about that at all. And like, I don't think we need to get into it deeply, but it's worth saying just that COVID is scary. And Al and I are both New York City residents, so we're kind of on lockdown at this point when we're recording, and things can change and escalate from here. But right now we're both safe and healthy, and we're of course going to do what we can to continue to give content, but obviously none of us have a crystal ball, so we're actually recording this pretty late in the game for when I would normally want to start editing. So apologies for maybe a little more of a shoddy job than I would normally do.
But I think at this point, so many people are in lockdown that any content is highly appreciated.
I mean, since right before this, I was talking about how upset I was that somebody hadn't put any content out. Not like upset and mad at them, but just like, oh, I'm personally devastated that I am not getting this content right now because I could really use it. So if this brings any joy to anybody, really happy for that to be the case.
Yeah, no, my brother just out of kindness for me was like, oh, I have an extra slot on my Spotify account. I'm going to give it to you. So, when you call it, no matter what, as long as you have minimal internet access, you have, you know, something to occupy yourself. And I was like, thank you, James. That's why you're the better of my two brothers.
So as Al mentioned, we're doing sort of another topical episode, or you know, whatever you want to call it. And it's not even that, like, I feel like the other two episodes were more cohesive. This is just, hey, there was a bunch of movies that we saw, so we're going to talk about them.
It's funny, one of the things, since I got the Spotify and my brother gave me headphones, I've been listening to podcasts, and it seems like recently all the anime podcasts I know have recently done a, hey, there were all these movies in theaters, let's talk about them episode. So we're in good company once again.
We're on trend. That's so us.
We have a few interesting movies to talk about that we both saw together when that was still a thing.
Oh, God.
Look, Kate, it's weird. Before I did this podcast, I was listening to a lot of The Police. And then I realized, oh, The Police makes me really nihilistic and depressed. I don't need that for the podcast. So then I started listening to a lot of Elton John and Queen, which picked up my mood. But I still feel like I got a little bit of The Police in my system. So, you know, be aware of that.
I mean, Al, I feel like that's just you. I think I like to think that I know that pretty well about you. Whether or not we're in the same room together ever again for the rest of our lives.
Once again, to get back on track, not to me talking about my musical tastes. We went to see some movies. I'm going to get one out of the way that I feel doesn't kind of fit with the other three. And I'm the only one who saw it. Kate was in turn going to talk about the Digimon movie, but once again, things happened. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Konosuba movie, because Konosuba is actually a series that I only started because of Anime Secret Santa. It was my Secret Santa pick for 1 year. And it's a series that we skipped over because it was isekai and it looked kind of pervy. And that is not a bad assessment, because both of those things are true. It just has a certain amount of humor that the person who recommended to me picked up on, of kind of almost Rumikio Takahashi horrible characters and a lot of tabletop RPG references. So it's kind of a trash show that has a certain amount of appeal for me, but is still pretty trashy, a trash show. And I feel the movie continues that trend. Yeah, so it's like definitely one of those movies where it's not going to change your opinion on the show. If anything, it just kind of swerves in hard on anything problematic about that series. Just now it has a bit of a theatrical budget. The only thing I did find interesting is that usually when you have a movie like this for theaters, you generally try to hit like all the segments of the fan base. Like my roommate saw the My Hero Academia movie, the new one, the second one. Both of us saw the first one. And one of the things I noticed is like those movies always try to throw in all the popular characters. Even if they focus on a few of them, they'll make sure to have like big scenes for all the popular characters, because they want to catch as wide a net as possible. But this one really focused in on one of the heroines. It focused in on Megumin, the like basically the caster girl, the sorcery one. And like the movie was like literally 80% about her. They go to her village, all the plot is around her. And the other two main girls in the series are pretty much just there along for the ride. And they have one or two scenes each, but they are so not focused on. And I just found that really odd. And just with a little extra knowledge, I know that she ends up being the one that like ends up with a relationship with the main character. So I wonder how much... Oh, that's spoilers, but it's friggin' Konosuba, so who cares? But I wonder how much she was just so popular, either because of that relationship, or just or she is the one that is in the relationship with the main character because she was so popular. I don't know enough about Konosuba to guess which one, you know, which one is the which one is the horse and which one is the cart. But I do feel like if you're an American fan who doesn't know that, it might seem like an odd focus on that one character as opposed to the other two heroines. But if you realize the way the series goes, you're a lot more like, oh, okay, this makes sense in that regard, which I just thought was odd. It has, like, some very nice animation at points, but man, that is not a series I could recommend easily, because there is always some problematic humor in it. And, like, I mean, you just saw that from watching that one with, you know, the guy who's transported the wrestler who's transported to another world and opens the pet shop, that like that guy has definitely a sense of humor that the only defense for it is he does eventually set up some more complex jokes that would not be evident with all the low-hanging jokes he usually goes for in the beginning of his series. And I feel like it's a big ask to have anybody watch a series like that. Because, oh, it might get better as long as you ignore all the problematic parts and hope that the more complex jokes eventually appeal to you. Which is not like a thing I would ask most people. I feel like that is a deal breaker, and I see no shame in that.
And then how did you feel about, you were saying that the focus is very different from the TV show. So did you, is this a character that you liked and you enjoyed seeing them be the focus or?
I like all three of the general heroines. Darkness, the paladin girl, is probably, if they had focused on her, only because she is without a doubt the most problematic of the three of them, and like some of her jokes really go into like, ooh, I feel uncomfortable territory. If they had focused on her, I probably would have been like a lot more, ooh, well, that was something I sat through. But Aqua, Megumin, or a lot of the side characters are fine enough. So, the focus on her, she's probably like the most conventionally pleasant character. She has a character design that would appeal to lolicons more than she's a full lolly. Other than that, she's probably the least objectionable main cast member, so in that regard, I didn't really have a problem with them focusing on her. Once again, I don't think it will win over anybody, and I feel like that series, if I've never mentioned it on the podcast, I find it fun but very hard to recommend. And so it continues.
Okay, so I feel like we're having to reach back in our brains and remember a very different time and talk about Weathering with You from Makoto Shinkai. And so Al and I actually saw this separately.
Because I saw it at Anime NYC as press. And what, as I mentioned in my review on the blog, I had probably the less than ideal conditions because I was super sleepy that day and I drank some coffee before I went in there, and then I rushed to see the movie, and so I had a full bladder the whole time, and especially considering the content of that movie, it was probably the worst movie in the world to constantly want to have to go to the bathroom, but can't. If I left, I couldn't get back in. So I just had to sit through the whole movie, kind of just crossing my legs and tapping my toes.
Then I didn't end up seeing it. I don't think I saw it until 2020. I think it was in January. So a couple months apart, and Al already wrote, a bit of a review about it, but we still thought it was worth exploring, just having discussion about it together. This will be a spoiler-free review. Usually that's how we do things, so.
I feel like if the three movies, this one is the most likely to get like a re-release, considering how popular it was. The third one, I could also see, but this one I feel like is def. I feel like it's probably going to be played in theaters a few times, and it's going to get a DVD release. So there's lots of reasons that people might be interested in this review and not want to be spoiled.
And so this is, it's not a direct sequel or follow-up to Your Name, although it's set sort of in the same universe, which is to say there's a few cameos and also there's some, like there's some magic, like some magical realism sort of elements to the story.
So there is a boy who runs away from home and tries to make a home in Tokyo as a runaway, and he's having a hard time. And so two things kind of come along and change his situation. One of them is a man who saved him from falling overboard when he first got into Tokyo. He eventually meets up with him and gets a job working kind of for slave labor in his crazy, like, occult conspiracy magazine. And the other one is a girl who works at a McDonald's, who he befriends, who, sees his bad living situation and takes kindness on him, and then he later on helps her. But more importantly, he finds out that in this kind of rain-soaked Tokyo, she has the magical ability to push back the rain and make small periods of sunshine. And this power eventually brings them together, but ultimately may tear them apart.
Thanks for that dramatic setup for the rest of the film. So, I think one of the things I thought was strong in this movie was I thought that the character personalities were very strong. Like I liked the characters and who they, like how they reacted, how they sort of approached the world. And I thought like, oh, I'd want to know more about a lot of these people that either we encounter or who are main parts of the story. But I think that plot-wise, it's just not as strong as its characters.
Oh yeah, it's funny. I made my thoughts about what I was going to say on this podcast, and then I listened, like I said, a whole bunch of, like, I know Annie Gamers and Otaku no Radio and All Geese Considered did a bunch of, like, anime movie reviews, and all of them did Weathering With You. And the thing that I found interesting was how all over the place the reviews were for this movie. I feel like there was every like reaction from like "I loved it," to "I thought it was the worst thing in the world." I mean, Ink from Otaku no Radio thought it was Shinkai's worst work, even worse than Children Who Chase Lost Voices. But no one, even the people who loved it, thought it was anywhere good as Your Name, which was like the movie that it always got compared to. And I feel like the constant criticism was exactly what you said, was that people who liked it liked the characters, liked the animation, liked some of the ideas, but the consistent criticism was that the plotting and just the general story structure started interesting places, but never pulled itself as satisfactory as people would like in the end. And generally, how much they thought that it didn't come together in the end was generally what decided how much they liked the movie.
One of the things that just doesn't work here is for me, and just in my opinion of the story structure and the plotting, is like I think it's there's too many elements. So I actually think that it was more complicated than it needed to be. And even some things that happen early on are just like unnecessary. And when you like, I just feel it kind of ends up wasting time on these more like extraneous parts of the plot. And when it, I think it could have been a really good movie if it had really been much more focused. And I think that's really unfortunate because I do think that it had some really, it had an, obviously it has an incredible animation, but like, I don't know. Like, I expect it. It has weather, so like these poor animators, having rain scenes like consistently is just like the hardest thing in the universe. So like that's certainly an incredible feat. Like it looks incredible. But I just don't think that even though the ending itself was like it was all right, I guess. Like, I don't feel as though I even understood what the character's takeaway from it all was.
You know what it reminded me of? Like the first thing that popped into my head, which I think maybe have been a better way to finish the movie. Do you remember Jormungand? Where, to not spoil too much of Jormungand, but it's been old enough, and I'd rather spoil Jormungand than Weathering With You, is there's this whole plot to essentially change the world. I won't go into it, but make a major change to the way that the world of Jormungand, that's basically based on our world, would work. And at the end, it happens. And the move, and the, basically the series ends right there. Basically, all right, this major change has happened, and the world will be very different after this. But in a way, I almost feel like the series was like, it is so huge a difference. I almost feel the mangaka was uncomfortable exploring that world and felt like they didn't need to. The story was done, and they would rather leave you to determine what the fallout of this monumental change to the world would be. And I feel like Weathering With You did that, but then felt the need for a very short amount of time to explore that world, but not enough to fully explore the ramifications, but not enough, but more than just being like letting your imagination go with what how the world has changed. And I feel like Shinkai had to commit one way or the other for that to really feel like it meant more to the characters and the world. Because if he just stopped there, it would have been old Shinkai, which I wonder how much after Your Name he wanted to move away from, which is a very like ambiguous ending, and he leaves it up to the viewer to determine a lot of what happens. But if he didn't want to do that, he really, really, really had to show how it affected those characters more than the bare minimum he did to get the ending that he wanted.
And speaking of Shinkai's intentions, so at the screening that I went to, it was one of those special screenings where they have a little interview with the director at the end, or they, they show some Q&A or something like that. And one of the kind of the themes that comes up in this film is talked about by Shinkai as well, is sort of like responsibility of young people, and then also like in the environmentalism. There's like definitely some environmentalism aspects to this that you could read into it. And then there's also kind of Haruka and Hina's responsibility once they start using her powers, and then like how that. But kind of the pressure put on young people, and in the ways that they might have to fix the world if the world is broken. See, those are like real. Those are like the interesting things, and like Shinkai talks about them. But I don't think it's really fully successful in making a statement about any of those things. Like you said, Al. I feel like he doesn't kind of like fully commit, and so you kind of get almost a very wishy-washy like response to kind of those themes.
When I was thinking about all three movies, one of the things that I brought up in my review on the blog was that at one time, Makoto Shinkai, when this was more of a thing, was seen as like, will he be the next Miyazaki? And I feel like, interestingly enough, I felt like Your Name, actually, Garden of Words, I felt broke him out of that. And that's what I feel like made Your Name so interesting. But I feel like, because another thing that came up in all the reviews was, and I know you don't feel this way, but I do notice a lot of people had the same impression that I did, that Shinkai didn't totally throw out what a Shinkai movie is, but I feel Your Name kind of tweaked his general formula. And a lot of people felt that Weathering You, like, continued on this kind of second revision Shinkai kind of film. And I just, yeah, what part of me just always sensed that, like, he felt like Your Name, like, was like, this is the formula that lets me tell the stories I want to tell, but it's also mainstream popular. But I felt like this movie, like, try to do what you like, redo the formula of Your Name, but add in more complex themes and more elements. He just tried to, like, top himself for what he did in Your Name with his, like, this is a great formula now that I have. And so I'm going to do it bigger and better. And I think that he bit off more than he could chew with the form his new formula. Whereas I think he, I know some people criticized him for that, but I think that if he had used the formula again, but with the same scale, like you said, if you had chopped off some of the elements, made it a little more streamlined, I think the movie could have succeeded more. But that's pure Al speculation.
I mean, no, I agree. I mean, obviously, I think there was, like I said, I think there were some strong things about the film. So if the storyline was streamlined, I think it could have worked, with maybe an altered ending. And I will, just as my last thought about this movie is, many people know that I have always enjoyed Shinkai, so I didn't necessarily feel he needed to change, but I am also not opposed to him changing. But this movie, I think, besides children, which again I don't even discuss in the canon. This, I think, is the only Shinkai movie I've ever seen that did not make me cry. So I therefore consider it partially a failure on that. I don't think it had that emotional resonance that his work usually does for me. So, and I think maybe it's unfair of me to always expect that, but he has a pretty good track record with me on that. So.
So, two questions before we end and move on to the next one. One, the other major complaint I saw in all the reviews was, do you think he had a little too much of the AMV segments?
Oh my God, I forgot to talk about that. There was too much music in this movie. There, especially music with lyrics. It was it there was songs with words crashing into each other. It was, yeah, I feel like it's been so long since I saw this movie that thank you, Al, for bringing that up.
I mean, the element in 5 centimeters per second is iconic. I feel like people generally like the big, I'll call it AMV segment of Your Name. But once again, as a theme of the whole review, a little too much. It was like the AMV segments in this movie were just a little too bombastic, a little too frequent, like a little too much.
Well, like you, Al, the fact that you even had to say that there was like more than one, it's like, look, or maybe you can have like a little like intro one and then maybe like your climactic one, but there was just so much music. And the music itself was like fine. It wasn't like bad music, but it didn't feel directed. Again, it was just like this overcomplication of this movie.
So, my last question before we move on is, this movie did really well. So, I mean, Your Name was a monster success, and this was even bigger. So, do you think, and this is pure speculation, I always like to know what I feel like we may be wrong, but I always like to hear your opinions since they're well thought out. But I'm going to preface anything we say here, if we're wrong, this is just us, shooting the breeze. Do you think that because this movie did so well, he will learn any lessons from the critical response more than the box office response?
Well, so that's an interesting question. So another in the after the movie interview segments.
Because I didn't get that.
Yeah, so Shinkai actually kind of addresses the similarity of this to Your Name. Like he sort of like talks a little bit about him wanting to do something like very different after this, like, oh, this, like, kind of that he felt like he needed to follow up Your Name, but then the way he talked about it made it seem like, I don't know if that was pressure on him to do that or if pressure on himself to do that, but that the next movie would not be this type of movie. Now, whether or not that comes to fruition, I don't know. I don't know. I guess in the way that he talked about it, it almost made me seem like it almost. I think this is me reading into it possibly, but it almost felt to me like he wasn't necessarily totally happy with the result of this film for himself, not money-wise, because this interview was obviously like happening probably when the movie was coming out. I don't even know. But like the way he spoke about it, it didn't seem to me like he was totally satisfied.
Yeah, I just, I, part of me feels like from the trajectory of his art that I've seen, that he can take criticism and internalize it. I just feel like Your Name was such a crazy hit that it could be the kind of thing that makes you ignore criticism you would normally take when you're in a humbler space. And it feels like one of those movies that get you kind of the free pass of people criticizing you, kind of like how I feel later Miyazaki kind of goes off the rails when there's nobody to rein him in. And I'm not saying that's what is happening or will happen with Shinkai. It's just like a slight worry for me that I feel like an older Shinkai, I would be fairly certain would see these things and make corrections, but I just, part of me is worried that Your Name was such a monumental success that it might make him, even if he's vaguely aware or totally aware of what went wrong with Your Name, a little blind to.
Do you mean to say Weathering With You? Because you keep saying your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. My bad. I just meant that Your Name was so popular that,
Oh,
like,
okay.
that I feel Your Name was so popular and universally praised that it might give him this kind of bubble against the criticism for Weathering You.
I'm kind of curious, though, and this is just a general question that I really don't ever know the answer to, but like I can obviously look at English reviews of this film and like it's like a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. So like obviously a lot of people really liked this movie. But I have no idea like what the if there was criticism in Japan for this film, what critical reviews looked like, what people were saying about it beyond just like seeing it, like obviously box office was really big for it. And I also don't know how much that affects anything. I mean, there's like the rev I know that there's just like a lot of trade publications, like just the whole kind of mechanism of the way it all works in Japan is like so different, that this has nothing to do with this in particular, but I just have no idea really how much that affects what people do. And like I said, from me reading into the small interview that I got to see of Shinkai, to me it felt like maybe he was almost under pressure because of Your Name, and that I don't know, it's almost like kind of a be careful what you wish for kind of a thing, like Shinkai I feel like is such a solitary it has been such a solitary figure who like just like plods on with his like kind of short films, and then like after years and years and years of spending so much time doing these things, you have this incredible breakout, and like, does that change things for the better or for the worse? I think it kind of remains to be seen. This isn't like the worst movie I've ever seen. And it was still mostly, it could be enjoyable in parts, but I think it all rests on the next movie.
Yeah, no, I you're right. Both of our speculations will either be proven right, wrong, or which parts are correct by what he produces next. I was just curious. It was something that just popped into my head. I didn't have like a definitive answer. It was more of like a vague worry with a bit of wonder, and I was just curious what you thought as well.
I also just wanted to say I'm glad you brought up Garden of Words because one, I really liked that movie, and even though the rain is more beautiful in Weathering With You, that's the better rain movie. So
Well, like, I think Ink in Otaku no Radio put it best that the rain in Garden of Words is like comforting, and it like makes this little world for these two characters who need each other and a place to be safe. Whereas the rain in Weathering You is like pretty much like a villain character. It's like an opposing force throughout the whole thing. So it has a very different feel of rain. Like what that almost the personality of the rain is 180 different in both the movies. Which I thought was a very good observation. So I thought I'd throw it in here and give Ink a little thumbs up for. Ooh, that maybe that was a good observation.
Okay, so well, now we'll move on to another movie that Al saw at Anime NYC, but only partially, right?
Yeah. The Wonderland, which was known as Birthday Wonderland in Japan. And this one was directed by the same director who did Miss Hokusai, which we both really liked.
Hold on, I want to stop you just for a second to tell you that this movie is based on a book called Strange Journey from the Basement.
Oh yeah, I remember seeing that in the credits when we saw it in theaters and being like, wow, this seems to be a movie anytime that it gets brought over or adapted anywhere, they just come up with a radically different. Like, I feel like if someone really loved this movie and made an American version, it would have like a completely different name.
I think that was a good call, though, to change. So, this is a movie about a girl named Akane who goes on a errand for her mother and is in this shop, and this woman who works there is sort of like a family friend and auntie who kind of annoys her. And they get a mysterious visit from a guy who just like pops out of the basement stairs of the building. And much like the White Rabbit, kind of like insists, that they need to come along and
Well, Kate, he wants the girl
I was gonna say that.
to
Go
come
ahead, go
along
ahead.
with them, but her auntie friend is like, nope, I have always wanted since early girlhood to go on a magical fantasy adventure. You bitches ain't leaving me behind. I'm inserting myself on your Builds Roman adventure to a fantasy lady, young lady.
Yeah, I mean, God bless her. She is the absolute best part of this movie. is the and like I maybe it's just because we're adults, so we just like really, but I really liked that like she's like gung ho that not only is she coming on this journey, but Akane is going to embrace her destiny, and because like she's not really like into going very much. She's like, you know, she's had a hard time at school, and so she's sort of, you know, just not in a real like good mental place. So she doesn't really want to embrace this whole magical journey, but she's sort of forced to.
She seems like such a self-insert character for all us old people. Of like, hell yeah, I would fucking insert myself into this adventure. Because I want to go and eat fantasy food and meet fantasy creatures. And
And
live a life of.
save the prince and do all the things that all the books that you read as a child said that you would be able to do. Even though it had, it's called Wonderland, and I did make like a little bit of an allusion to the White Rabbit. It's not super Alice in Wonderland-y. I think in a way, I think they only inserted that a little bit just because Japan is so obsessed with Alice in Wonderland. I feel like that's like why it's called Birthday Wonderland.
I'm not saying that it's Alice in Wonderland, but I'm not saying it's Alice in Wonderland. Go see the movie, see what you see.
And yeah, there's like a lot of fantastical elements. There's some like absurd things that happen. There is more of like a thrust of a journey to it. It's not just sort of a wacky world.
She has a prophecy to save the world to fulfill. And she must, go on her journey to save this world from ecological disaster.
So I feel like I'm repeating myself, but once again, this is a movie that I thought had some really great characters. Obviously, Chi, hero to us all, representing the olds. And I really wanted to know so much about all of these characters and really wanted to follow them, but I think the emotional through line and the plot, especially with kind of this missing prince character, it comes together in this incredibly beautifully crafted scene. I mean, that it just like take that out and like amazing, but I felt like I didn't get the emotional journey up to that scene for it to really hit me in the way that I knew that it could. And I felt like there was just a number of moments like that where it just needed a little bit more like connective tissue to really lead me through emotionally.
I think the thing that best sums it up is we all saw the movie and we were talking about the scene, the big ceremony scene at the end, and kind of the stakes involved and everything. And I was going, oh, the girls next to me didn't realize the stakes involved and were totally lost. And then one of the people we were with was like, oh no, but it was this, this, and that. And I'm like, yeah, I know that. And you know that. We all got it. But I think it says a lot that the two girls that were next to me never picked up on that. And because they only revealed so much of the major stakes pretty much after they were over.
And there was no build. There was no build to those stakes, I feel. There was just a lot of like journey, journeying through and not really seeing this ancillary character as being so connected to that journey in any way.
It's like it really wanted to play these big reveals and keep it very close to their chest until they came out. But in doing so, it kind of lessened the impact more than I think it realized it did.
I agree. I think you're totally right. And to your stakes point, it was like intellectually, I knew what the stakes were, but like I didn't feel the stakes in the moments that they were happening.
I think it also just wanted to have, like, your perspective on certain characters change so much when you knew the truth. But I feel like, one, I think we guessed a lot of it before the reveal came, and then it just, because the way that it telegraphed certain things, but then kept back other things, it kind of sabotaged its message. But I mean, there's a lot of criticisms with this movie, but I do feel like the best parts of it were when they just had to stop places and explore the various parts of this world and kind of delve into bits of lore. I know, Kate, you'll be shocked and surprised that, what do you call it, random lore and world building interests me. But, as someone who's never met me before, these are things that Al's like. I think we both really, really wish that she was more than just a comedic side character. I think, weren't you the one who like criticized that like they just like shunt Chi off into like this cul-de-sac of a plot for like the big climax, whereas she was in at least if at minimum she was always a side car a sidekick character. And at most, she was a secondary protagonist throughout the whole movie. But then when the big things happen, they're just like, gee, you have to get stuck over here so you can't be in any way involved in the climax.
It's too bad. I mean, I feel like this is, I feel like this movie had its problems, so I'm not actually saying that this should, it should have been this way, but I would have been, I was really kind of hoping this movie was about Chi, like usurping the young, like, oh, you think that the main character is like the young girl character who's like coming of age, and it's like, no, this is actually a story about this woman who like usurps her, like, and like becomes the hero of her own story later in life. Like, I'm not saying that like that would have that that's what this should have been, but like I definitely am there for that if that ever like if that happens. I think this
Kids
movie could have
like,
been successful
make
without
this
that.
movie, I will watch
Yeah,
it.
like I don't think this movie should have done necessarily needed to do that to make it good. I think it just like it got off. It almost just didn't foreshadow and like place all the elements in the right order in order to really make things feel satisfying at the end. Satisfying, that's the word, like I don't feel like it, you don't feel like yes, like we've gotten somewhere by the end.
It's just that she had this interesting Misato from Evangelion gets dragged, basically inserts herself into a fantasy adventure vibe. And I too, like, I knew it wasn't gonna happen, but I too had like this dream that, like, what if she was not even usurping the main girl, but what if she turned out to be just as important? And yeah, no, it turned out she was just a comedic sidekick, which was fine, but like, Man, I think we would have both really enjoyed the movie that we briefly envisioned in our head.
I would have, but I was also able to enjoy this movie as it was. I just feel like it could have been a better movie and without changing too much. You know what I mean? Like, not like, oh, it needed to be so different in order to be good. I think it was all like kind of there. It just needed to be put in a different order.
It's a very fun fantasy world that, has some very classical elements, but kind of has their own fun little take on them. And it also just felt like a really great family-friendly world that was for all ages, like one of those. Because once again, to come back to it, this really felt like it wanted to be a Miyazaki style. Here's this fun fantasy adventure for all ages. You bring the kids, but the adults also have something to cling to. And you rewatch with, just anybody. And it appeals to Japanese audiences, appeals to overseas audiences. It appeals to just. It was trying to go for that vibe, and I don't think that it felt like it couldn't do it. It had a really great start. It had lots of really great elements, but it just fell short of its pretty admirable potential. And if you saw it, I think you'll have a good time. Like you said, there's some rough points, and parts of it will just kind of leave you like, ooh, man, if this had only just been great instead of good.
All right, and to wrap up our movie marathon is Ride Your Wave, the latest film from Science Saru, directed by Masaki Yuasa. And this is also a 2019 movie that we only recently got here. This is about, oh my God, guys, I just love it so much. Hold on. I'm just getting excited about even talking about the plot. So, it's about this woman, Hinako, who is a surfer, and her romance with this firefighter who rescues her one day when her building catches fire. And it's about their really super adorable, cute romance until he dies. Saving someone in the ocean, and you think that it's just gotten really dark, but he comes back as a spirit who appears in any body of water if she is singing their song. And so it becomes this story about like how to grieve and loss, but also it's like really funny. And, obviously has like a magical element to it.
It's a very interesting mix of happy and sad to the point where what you were saying, I was like, man, I could really envision, depending on how much loss, and especially how recently you've had a loss, this movie affecting people very differently and how they view how much of this movie is funny and how much of this movie is kind of poignant and almost dark because
But I feel like it can be both of those things.
in a way, what parts of this movie you focus on almost it feels to me is like almost the mindset that you have when you go into the movie. I feel like you could have like six different people come in, and like if you're like, how much of this movie is contemplative and how much of this movie is funny, and like they would have like six different percentages.
I'm a person who has a bit, who likes some dark humor, but I don't even think that's what this is. I feel like it's a really great movie, I guess, about the process of loss, you know what I mean? Because like Hinako, we go with her through the process. And like, even though, if you've seen the trailer for the movie, you know that he is dead. But like, I guess if you went into this movie without knowing that, like, I also wonder how you might react to kind of that change that, like, I kind of really commend the story for going through the whole thing, as opposed to, more often than not, we usually see a lot of stories where we are like on one end or the other, like the loss comes at the end, or like the loss has happened, or the loss happens like right at the beginning, and then we follow a character through their loss. So like, I really like thought it was interesting for them kind of to go through everything, and I felt like it really gave it this happy, sad vibe throughout the whole thing of, because I think even the moments that were like funny were also sad. I guess that's what I was trying to say, is that like, not only is the movie happy, sad, but I feel like even all, like a lot of the moments that are funny, I think you also know and can see how they are sad. Like two things can be true at the same time.
They're so well blended that I feel like a lot of people will come out of this movie, like if you just didn't have them next to each other, it would almost seem like they might be describing two different movies. Like one description, you would think it's this comedic movie with like some like more serious tones underneath if you're looking for them. Whereas the other one, you might see it as this serious movie about loss with some comedic elements to kind of like make it a lot more palatable and kind of help you, especially if you're going through a lot of grief, like kind of dealing with it yourself. And I don't feel like people like, oh, the first person is describing the movie wrong and the second person is describing the movie right, or vice versa. I feel like it's almost, if I'm not sure intentionally or not, but designed so that it has that reaction. Or at least that's like how I almost see it. Because I kind of, I saw it as a movie that is very contemplative about grief, but makes it very easily digestible by putting in a lot of comedy, but making sure that the comedy never undercuts the more serious elements.
Right. I feel like it doesn't try to diminish true grief in the story, and like how different people process it. And like, you know, Hinako is definitely going through a really tough time, clearly for obvious reasons. And so I don't think that it totally diminishes that. That like that need to process and how people process differently. I will say that like the ending, there is like a really kind of bombastic climax to this story that like I think you could take it or leave it, you know, like kind of moment, but
I will say that my only major criticism of the movie is that Yuasa definitely had this vision, especially the interview with the lady who works at Science-Saru, made me feel like he had this vision of how he wanted this movie to end, and god damn it, he was gonna get that scene in there if he had to move heaven and hell to get that scene in there. And it's like visually striking, and it's not doesn't break the tone, but god, does he contrive some stuff to get this ending?
it's almost like too big. Like I feel like if it was just like on a smaller scale, but the exact same plotting, but anyway, like I mean, I was predisposed to love this film, so like I saw the trailer for this movie and I was like, this movie was like someone got into my brain and made the movie that I wanted. So like even I was a little like, whoa, that was a little over the top. But I think it at least kind of wraps things up in a way that like lets all the elements come together. I just think it could have been done on a smaller scale, a smaller building.
I also just like that the lady they were interviewing kind of was like, I'm just saying, Yuasa, this seems like a little bit over the top. Maybe we could. And she was like, and then he storyboarded it all. And I was like, it is pretty visually impressive. And I'll just accept. She didn't say it in so many words, but like, he's the boss. And he can make it work, so I'll let it go. I'm not gonna fight on this. But I felt like she felt like the both of us, like, this is great. Maybe just, I don't know. You're up here at 11. I think we'd be happy here at 8.
Yeah, yes, totally. I also think, you know, there's so not only is Hinako interacting with this go her ghost boyfriend, but she's also interacting with his best friend and also his sister, and they're also kind of processing differently. So I think, you know, there's other characters who are also kind of going on this journey with her, but like Hinako's the only one who sees him. And actually, I think one of the interesting elements of her process in here is that seeing him actually doesn't, like, I think ultimately he realizes the ghost, and she realizes that, like, seeing him actually doesn't help her grief, like it doesn't help her move on, you know, like it actually, you know, it's not like it she doesn't want to let go of him, but like, and like that's one element, but like it also doesn't let her live. So it's really like, yeah, like it's just really poignant and serious, like even though it's like also fun ghost boyfriend. Like, and it made me cry a lot. Like, I think I cried two or three times in this movie. So, I don't think Yuasa movies ever made me cry.
Yeah, man, Yuasa is such a skilled guy. This movie just always reminds me, like, he's at his best when there's somebody to just be like, Yuasa, you're great. Not just like you gotta once again, why I think he works best when he's adapting other people's work, although I think this was an original story.
But he didn't write the story.
Ah, once again, I feel like I always like him the best when he's like taking somebody else's work and like kind of fully realizing it. Just because I feel like he then has to work within constraints. I feel like he really thrives then, or at least I enjoy his work the best then. And so
And
I thought this was the first one that he wrote that I really liked. Oh well.
yeah, he didn't write it. The screenplay was written by Reiko Yoshida, who I'm not familiar with, but has a pretty long list of things, but it's original, so it's an original screenplay. She also wrote is the screenplay writer for Oko's Inn.
Which we both enjoyed.
Yeah, which was really good. So, very impressed with her. She's done a lot of script supervision, but so she hasn't done a lot of screenplays, but she mostly does like a lot of script stuff. So, but if those are like the two most recent things, so good on her.
Although Oko's Inn wasn't original for her, that was I think a long running series of children's books, but
Oh,
still,
okay.
I feel she's a skilled writer. I mean, there's a distinct, and that was I think a long series of books, so the ability to take a big series and turn it into a single movie is no small feat. So I'm not like, this lady is the writing equivalent of a tracer.
I feel like maybe it just made really like the a woman wrote this movie, and like I feel like I can almost feel it, like I feel like maybe it would be a little different if Yuasa had written this movie.
No, it was probably like the strongest of the three of them. Oh, and to tie back into my thing, where I was thinking was, in a way, I wonder if on a certain level, Yuasa is kind of the next Miyazaki in the fact that he's also totally not in any way like Miyazaki, but he fills this void for like anime film that like film people really get behind, which isn't totally the ni Miyazaki niche that people had hoped to be filled, but I feel like he is like one of the main things people were worried about not being filled.
I mean, yeah, I feel like the thing that I think he has proven now in more recent years is that he is so versatile, like in just incredible amount of like I don't love everything, you don't love everything, but he can jump from family friendly to whatever Devilman Crybaby is to to
Family
ride
friendly, Kate. It's also family
your
friendly.
to ride your wave, which is not like a not family friendly movie, but at the same time I feel like it speaks it feels like such an adult movie, but also not in like a mature adult quotation marks way. So I feel like and it's just like he continually impresses me every time, even if it's not something that I enjoy.
Yeah, I feel like there's like a family-friendly or a kids movie about moving on from death would have a very, like, when you lose like a family member or a parent, especially, you deal with that differently than when you lose someone you're in a romantic relationship with, which is something that, especially like one that was on a mature, like, not that if you lost someone you loved in your teenage years, it would not greatly affect you, but Yeah, like this is a movie that it's not that it can't resonate with someone younger, but someone who's at least a young adult or older is going to probably, unless they have some really shitty luck, probably appreciate more, or at least differently.
Oh, and just be warned, if you see this movie, they have a song, like I said, in w that is the song that can bring about the ghost, but also that means it is played like a million times in this movie, and you will have it stuck in your head for a week if, when you leave. And I like to think that, because like at the beginning of the movie, when it becomes their song, because it's like just on the radio the whole time that like when they first start dating, but they're like, oh, it's that one song from that one movie. I just like assume they're making a Your Name joke, like immediately. I was just like, oh, I don't know why. I was like, no, that's the movie. That's the one. So yeah, but I like highly recommend. I maybe this is my favorite You Awesome movie. It probably is. What am I saying? Yes, it is.
Okay, you like it more than Devilman Crybaby? Your favorite is Yuasa work?
I mean, a lot of people are think maybe their favorite Yuasa work is gonna be Keep Your Hands Off Ezokin, which just finished up, but this one still ranks very, very high for me.
Looking back on all three of the movies,
You're not counting Konosuba, Al, in your
Konosuba is a different kind of high art. At best, one might say 420 type of high art. But I feel like nobody involved in Konosuba is fortunately delusional enough to think that there is a work that shall bring together families and be remembered forever. It's like, dang, she a pretty girl with nice assets in a fantasy world doing fantasy jokes. Yuck! But I don't know. It's weird that I don't know, just these movies keep making me think that I'm kind of really glad that everybody has calmed down about the search for the next Miyazaki because I think we're able to get a lot more movies that are filling that void, but in their own way, as opposed to just trying to make their version of Studio Ghibli Miyazaki movies. And I think people will still try to do that because, that's a distinctly good niche to fall into. I mean, if you can do it right, that can be both good bank and good review. But I don't feel like people feel that that's the only way forward or that's what needs to be done to make cool and interesting films for a general audience, or that are artistic. And so, I might bring it up again, but I don't want people to just mindlessly pursue that. I feel like they should make the kind of movies they want. And if that happens to, if you as a young kid coming up in animation, see Castle of Cagliostro, see Spirited Away, see Nausicaä, and are inspired to make a movie like that, then, follow that inspiration. Put your own twist on it, but go that way, but I don't feel that should be the only way. Look at other directors. Look at Yuasa. Look at, Ikahara. Look at people outside the anime industry. Look at stuff that's not animated, and make, what feels right to you. And I think that if people do that, once again, I think your wave shows that you can make something really great and really touch a wide variety of people.
And yeah, and that like all of these movies are different from one another, and none of them are like a Miyazaki movie, but like that also doesn't matter. I think everybody knows, like intellectually, everybody knows, except for like, I don't know, board members or whatever, who have no souls or something, but like you can't make somebody be Miyazaki, like you it almost like the pursuit of it will probably like inevitably not work out. Like you just have to make the movies that you're trying to make. And like you might accidentally stumble upon it and become somebody that is looked up to in such a way. But yeah, I think we had criticisms for all these movies, but like I also think that it was still like even the ones that, we were more critical of, I feel like they were all still like they had their strengths. Like I'm very interested to see what every one of these directors does next. It wasn't like, oh man, check that person off the list of like great filmmakers or anything like that. Like it all felt, even if it wasn't perfect, it was promising. So
Or none of them have now fallen into the territory of, I'm gonna wait till I see a few people I trust watch this guy's next film and then maybe watch it.
right, exactly. I was just saying that about something, and now I don't remember. Like, I was saying that about a director or like a franchise or something where I was like, no, I no longer, like,
Was
this
it
is somebody
Star
I
Wars? I
really
feel
trust.
like Star Wars has become that to a lot of
No, it
people.
was definitely not Star Wars. Maybe it was the new Bond movie or something. It might have been that where I was like, no, you do not get, like, I will not do this again. I don't know if that was it, but that
No,
certainly is an example.
I remember when we saw the Bond trailer, you were like, ah, you ain't fooling me by bringing back Daniel Craig. I
Yeah,
know
it's
that you
like,
still are, what do you call it, tying this into the garbage fire that was Spectre.
yeah, so maybe that was it. But anyway, yeah, so nothing we saw, I feel like, went there. Like everything was still like very exciting to see. And this is such a great time of year for anime movies. Like January, February, March usually have a lot. I'm sad to be saying at the end of this podcast that, I was hoping that in this podcast I'd also be reviewing the final Digimon movie, which has been postponed for those of us in the US. So sometime at a later time. And as you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, this is like an ever-changing situation. So, I just hope everybody can take a little like, debriefing, like deep breath during just listening to this podcast as a little break from everything that's going on, and please stay as safe and healthy as you can, and hopefully we will have another podcast in April.